Eagles Entertainment.
With the 13th pick in the 2022 NFL Draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select...
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by LifeFriend. I'm your host, Fran Duffy, and week 10 of college football is over. It was an insane weekend with a huge shakeup in the college football rankings. Number 2 goes down. Number 4 goes down. Number 6 goes down. So much to cover, and we're going to get to as much of it as possible here at the top of the show with Saturday Scouting. Dane Brugler is here to once again recap the action. Game balls, we've got them. One play takeaways, you're going to hear about them. Who stood out in the biggest upsets? Who have we watched on film lately? We're going to cover that as well. And all of that and more at the very top of the show. Then we're going to transition to On the Clock, where Gabriella DiGiovanni gets to play judge and jury for Dane and I once again in our debate segment. This week's topic, who's Mr. Reliable? Who's someone that you could just count on to carry their production from college to the NFL? Dane and I will debate there in our On the Clock segment. After that, Eric Galco from the Shrine Bowl returns to the show, this time to go under the hood. We are going to talk about the wide receiver position, one of the more important positions in football. So we're going to get into that with Eric. And then after that, we wrap up the show with Scouting Report, where Ben Fennell and I are going to read some notes on a current player. That player this week, Miles Sanders, the Eagles starting running back. We're going to reflect on Miles coming out of college in 2019, coming out of Penn State. We're going to bring it full circle with how he has played so far, not just in his career, but especially this year in 2022. Before we get into the show, as always, make sure you head on over to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. If you've got a question, if you've got a mock draft, if you've got player rankings you want us to break down, whatever it is, head over there, leave it in the comment section. We will get to it here in an upcoming show. Appreciate everybody that has left us questions and comments in recent weeks. That said, let's get into this. Excited to talk through this week in college football with Dane Brugler in Saturday Scouting.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
All right, well, to dive into the weeds of what happened this week in college football, we've got my friend Dane Brugler from The Athletic. And Dane, before we get into this action, I do want to talk through what we saw from your top 50 last week. Obviously, Ben and I hit on it in the show, but I wanted to kind of just to ask you real quick, what was the hardest part about putting that together? I know you obviously trying to do it midstream in season was kind of had to be tough as well, but what was the hardest part about getting the top 50 together in early November?
The entire process is really, it's challenging, but it's useful because it really forces you to think about these players in kind of a binary way where it's like, okay, is player A or player B better, and why? And so it really makes you think. And so, my first top 50 comes out in August, and then I know my update's coming in first week in November. That's always what I shoot for, get 2 months of evidence about what to make changes. So I know it's coming. I make notes all the way leading up to it. But it's funny because at first you think, I'm not sure there are 50 guys that I truly think are worthy of the top 50. I mean, there's obviously enough players to go in there, but truly deserving, it's kind of tough. But then you go position by position, come up with the candidates, and then it's like, okay, well, how am I going to whittle this down? Because there's a lot of players you want to get in there. And that's why actually the 2 days after I came out with my top 50, I had another article about 15 guys that I just hated to leave off.
Yep.
That was a little bit painful. Guys like Cedric Tillman from Tennessee, and part of that's the injury with him, or Tyler Newbin from Minnesota, safety that I really, really like. Been talking about him all year. So, I think just and then with obviously with positions, because how do you compare a quarterback and a tight end? How do you rank those guys when the position value is so skewed towards obviously the quarterback compared to a tight end? I mean, how do you accurately do that when it's just a 1 through 50 type of ranking? So it'll never be an exact science to do it, but as long as I can defend it, I'll feel comfortable, and definitely felt comfortable with the top 50 update.
Was there like a surprise in terms of, what we talked about last week on the pod, maybe this offensive tackle class isn't so bad. When you add in Fashanu in the top 5 and you start looking, you're like, all right, well, there's actually a few guys we're talking about here in the top 20, top 25.
That's exactly it. The tackles. Cause that was my big thing coming into the year is like, I don't like any of these tackles except for, maybe Paris Johnson. I think there's a lot of potential there, but Skoronski, I saw as more of a guard, and he might still be a guard, but I think he deserves the shot to stay at tackle. You know, seeing him against over the weekend against Zach Harrison, who's got such an length advantage, he did a great job against him. So I would like to see Skoronski stay at tackle. But then, yeah, you factor in Foshinou, you factor in, you know, Broderick Jones, who has been playing. He's still very, very raw, but you see the athleticism, the body control. He's put himself up there. And then just a few names that, you know, you didn't expect, guys like Jalen Hyatt, Lucas Van Ness from Iowa. Lucas Van Ness isn't even a starter. And you know, it's funny how much more I've heard about Van Ness over the last 4 or 5 days, but he is deserving. He's the traits. I mean, they call him Hercules in the Iowa facility because of the power that he plays with. But he's not stiff. He's got a little bit of twitch to him, a little bit of body flexibility. So, and then the other part too is obviously the quarterbacks. You know, Bryce Young and CJ Stroud, Will Levis, you know, where does Hendon Hooker belong on there? And, you know, what other quarterbacks deserve consideration? Trying to figure out exactly where those land, that's definitely a tough part of this. So it's CJ Stroud, especially, you know, I got a lot of feedback. Well, because I had him at 10 and not higher, like a lot of people have him. But you know, I've got my questions about CJ Stroud. I still have my questions, and so it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out from here and what the next update looks like.
Yeah, well, we will obviously all be anxiously awaiting that release here in a few months. Let's get into this week, though, in college football. Like I said at the top of the show, 3 of the top 6 teams go down. So we'll start with the offensive side of the football. Who got your game ball on offense?
We've been putting this off long enough. It is finally time that we address it. No more tiptoeing around it. Bo Nix has emerged as a legitimate NFL prospect.
Wow.
And this isn't just because of what he did against Colorado. This has been a long time coming. But, you know, since that season opener against Georgia, Oregon is 8-0, and they've scored at least 40 points in every single game. And Bo Nix has been the engineer of that scoring. He's now up to 36 touchdowns this year, 5 more on Saturday against Colorado, 2 passing, 2 rushing, 1 receiving. Just for good measure, his athleticism is a big part of his success. His ability to throw on the move, he's been accurate. He's putting in the ball in places for his playmakers to do damage. I mean, Bo Nix just—he looked. If I would have said any of this after that opener against Georgia, I mean, you know, it just none of it would have made sense. But watching him the last 2 months, you know, he is a legitimate prospect who is on track to be drafted. If the draft were tomorrow, Bo Nix is getting drafted. Now we'll see how he finishes. We'll see how he does at an all-star game. We'll see how he does through the process. But if the draft were tomorrow, Bo Nix is getting drafted. And that's not something I thought we'd be talking about, after that season opener.
Well, talk about synergy, because, you know, Bo Nix, the guy who started his first 3 years in the SEC, transferred out west to the Pac-12. I want to do a guy that did the exact opposite. Jaden Daniels from LSU spent his first 3 years out west for Arizona State, transfers into the SEC for his final season at LSU, and has a huge game in the upset win over Alabama. 22 of 32 for 182 yards, 2 touchdowns through the air, ran for another 95 and a touchdown on the ground. Now, the 25-yard touchdown in overtime set up the game-winning 2-point play, a little RPO to the flat. Then the touchdown pass he threw with a couple minutes left in the fourth quarter was a corner out, perfectly placed, where only his guy could get it late in the game to put his team ahead. I think when you look at Jaden Daniels, that playmaking dimension certainly is there. Again, 95 yards and a touchdown on the ground, some of it by design, some of it were second reaction plays. But there are certainly things to clean up. But this has got to be the highlight of this kid's career, what he did here against Alabama on that stage at home at night in Death Valley. That was absolutely big time there for Daniels.
I think it really says something about his toughness, you know, both physically and mentally, that you know, going to a place like LSU where you are under a microscope, you're expected to win every single day or every single game. You're not allowed to have an off game. And it started a little rough, but he has gotten better and better and more comfortable, you know, blocking the outside noise, just trusting his skills. And, you know, the culmination was up to this point was what we saw on Saturday night. So that was really fun. And just as an aside, that I want to give a shout out to that running back, number 27. I don't even know his name, but that run in overtime, he showed phenomenal effort to block Brian Branch in the open field. That really opened that lane for Jaden Daniels to score that touchdown. It was really fun, though. When I was watching the film this morning, that really stood out. So I wanted to give a shout out to that running back.
that running back was Josh Williams, the true junior running back, 5'9", 200 pounds for LSU. The other quarterback in that game was Bryce Young, and I wanted to kind of pick your brain on this because you and I are both firmly in the camp that Bryce Young is a really good prospect. Obviously, he was in the top five of your top 50. What did you think about his performance? Because it's funny, as the game is happening, I'm hearing differing opinions on what Bryce Young looked like in that game against LSU.
It was an uneven performance. I think that's fair. Honestly, it was very, very similar to the Auburn game last year, which was another game on the road where the defense, I thought, had a great plan. Young was under 50% completions in both games. But both, I thought, were cases where the quarterback was just not getting a ton of help. And yet he was dragging the team towards the finish line late in the game. LSU did a great job mixing up their pressure, stunting, bringing linebackers from different angles. And for the most part, I thought Young did a great job maneuvering and handling that pressure, including a few of his patented Houdini acts where he's moving the pocket, buying time, finding receiver downfield. Was it one of his best games? No, he did miss throws. There were a lot of throws where there were simple throwaways too, because he had to. I mean, the pressure was bearing down on him, and his vision is unreal. To see everything going on around him, to understand the pressure, to get that ball out, the internal clock, the full field vision is so impressive. And so he would throw in some balls where they would skip before they got to the receiver. Those are just throwaways. I mean, he knew that he had to get the ball out, and so it is what it is. He just lived to play another play. But again, the struggles for that Alabama offense, I think, were more an indictment on the offensive line and a team that's just so desperate for playmakers at receiver. And this is another game where Jahmyr Gibbs led the team in catches because receivers just aren't getting open consistently. So there's only so much that Bryce Young can do.
Yeah, it was, like I said, just getting differing feedback was interesting. It's funny that you alluded to that Auburn game last year. That was like one of my favorite Bryce Young tapes from the summer, was that Auburn game. Even though the box score was so bad, I thought that was one of the ones where you showed that kind of patented toughness that you referred to. And I love just the image of him dragging that team to the end line. That's kind of what you expect from Bryce Young at this point in his career. Let's now go to the defensive side of the football and give out our game balls. I'll actually lead us off here on this one because you already talked about one of his teammates. You talked about Bo Nix, the Oregon quarterback. Well, let's go over to the defensive side of the football and talk about Oregon cornerback Christian Gonzalez. He's going up against his former team in Colorado and comes away with two picks, one of them going for a touchdown, and just breaking down both picks. The pick six came first, and that was pure raw athleticism in that play. He lost the wide receiver in his blind spot. It was a vertical route down the left sideline, and he does a full 360-degree turn back to the sideline, attacks downhill, picks the ball off without breaking any stride whatsoever, and then takes it to the house. So you see the athleticism on display there, the ball skills and the finishing ability. And then the second interception was just a thing of beauty. And this was pure like teach tape zone coverage stuff. He was off coverage. It was cover three. Colorado tried a staple concept to attack cover three. It was a post wheel. So they're hoping that the post route will take Gonzalez's eyes inside, and then they can sneak the little out and up behind him down the right sidelines for a big play and potentially a touchdown. But he's having none of it. He reads the play the entire way, picks it off perfectly, steps in front of the out and up route and takes it back for a modest return. I think when you look at Christian Gonzalez, we've talked about the traits absolutely there. From a cover corner standpoint, he's got everything you look for. I want to see a little bit more consistently playing downhill, but nice to see. When you have a guy that's going up against his former team, enters the transfer portal, goes up to Oregon, it's good to see him come up with that performance.
You know, I'm here for all of the Christian Gonzalez love. Big fan of his. He's ranked top 15 in my board in August, and then my update here in November. I think he absolutely deserves it, and he certainly did with what he did against his former team. And it was good to see that interception, especially the second one. Like you mentioned, being in zone coverage, I think he is more comfortable in man, where he could just use those traits, that length, that athleticism. But to show him use the mental side of the game and, you know, his understanding of what the offense is trying to do, break on the football, make a play, that was great to see.
All right, well, who got your game ball on defense?
Honestly, we could give it to the entire Georgia defense. They punched Tennessee in the mouth, and the Vols offense just had no answer. Hendon Hooker, he had more interceptions than touchdowns for the first time in over 2 years. You have to go back to his Virginia Tech days, the last time that happened. So, but individually, and then Jalin Hyatt said it too. He said the Georgia defense was way more physical than Alabama's after the game. But individually, how do you not give the game ball to Jalen Carter? I mean, two forced fumbles, including the one near the goal line that should have been a safety. A big-time player show up in big-time games, and he certainly did. I think it's a good example of why he's going to be the number one player in this draft for several teams this spring. I guarantee it. He will be. Now, he won't be there won't be a consensus. You know, he won't be – he's not a lock to be the first non-quarterback drafted, but I guarantee he will be the top player on some team's draft boards. He is that type of interior presence with his ability to create disruption. It's just not something you see every day.
It's just great to see him healthy, right? I mean, because he was so banged up in the first half of the year. So now seeing him down the stretch and adding that to this Georgia defense makes a dominant unit even more strong. It's a really, really impressive group, and they showed that off against this Tennessee offense. My one play takeaway also came from that game, from this Georgia defense, and from another one of their star players, and that's the corner, Kaylee Ringo. He had this interception against Tennessee wide receiver Cedric Tillman. It was press man coverage along the left sideline, the defensive left sideline. Showed patience at the line of scrimmage. Didn't get too over aggressive. The play strength shows up. He's under control the entire time. And basically, it's a vertical route. It's a go ball from Tillman. And so you see the strength, the ability to, it's called look and lean, where the receiver or the DB is pushing the wide receiver towards the sideline with his eyes back to the football. So you have to maintain body control, maintain discipline with your technique. Even with a stumble, maintain that control, pin Tillman to the sideline, and then finish for the interception with Tillman on his back in the end zone. Just an outstanding interception. Ringo is a traitsy player. There is no questions about it. And it's plays like this that give people like you hope, because I know you're really high on Ringo, that he can make this transition to be one of the top players in this draft.
He is one of the most exciting and frustrating players to study. I mean, there is obvious boomer bust potential here. I mean, it's like that interception. That was a great play that shows this is what he can be. Just not the sign. His speed is rare, but he also gave up, I think, 8 catches. His inability to cover a comeback route is, something that really is frustrating.
That worries me.
Yeah. It's something that he was one of the tougher ones in my top 50. Cause at the end of the day, you ask yourself, okay, if you're a GM and you're on the clock and you put Kaylee Ringo as your number, 8 player or whatever he was, you have the 8th pick and the first 7 guys are off the board. Are you taking Ringo there? And it's like, hard to answer that in a vacuum, but you understand where, the boomer bust, you understand the boom because he's 6'2" and he's going to run a 4.3. But you also understand the bust potential there because there's the technical side, the awareness side, it's still in the development phase. And could he get there? Absolutely.
Yep.
But there's no guarantee he will.
Who got your one play takeaway this week?
So that Ohio State-Northwestern game, by the way, a throwaway game for C.J. Stroud. Okay, anybody that wants to debate C.J. Stroud, I'm up for it. Don't bring me anything about the Northwestern game. Scouts are throwing this game away. I promise you that. It will not matter because of the weather in that game. But it will matter for several other players, including Northwestern defensive linemen.
You got it.
Adebare, all right? I'm not – the all first right. name I can't even
all
do.
Right, I'll take it.
Adebare, number 99. He was so disruptive all game. They play him as more of a 3 technique, but he'll also see some time on the edge. He's got a unique body type where he's a little shorter. He's under 6'2", about 280 pounds. So he's got some tweener traits to them, even though he doesn't have the height that you want, he's got decent arm length. He's got 33 inch arms. He's got massive hands. There's a play in the first quarter where he's lined up over the B gap as a 3 technique, and he does not allow that left guard to reach his outside shoulder on the outside zone run. It was 3rd and 1. He blew it up. Just a really disruptive player. You think about the smarts, the quickness, the physical hands. He plays his tail off. So projections are all over the map on him, and I think it's just because where do you play him? Can he live as a 3 technique in the league? Is he going to be an edge, kind of a base end? Is he just a pure rotational guy? I think that's where, figuring out the answer to those questions, that's why the projections are all over the map. But if you watch the Ohio State tape, you certainly see the intrigue with this player. He's, I don't know where he's going to get drafted, but I think he's definitely getting drafted.
Yeah, and that skill set is something that everybody is looking for in the NFL. Let's now get to our future stud, someone ineligible for next spring, but someone just a file away for the future. I will let you lead off here.
So, yeah, I felt like watching that LSU Alabama game, you know, felt like watching 3 years ago, number 40 at linebacker flying all over the field for that LSU defense. Now, Devin White ended up as a top five pick, and it sure feels like Harold Perkins, he's on that first round trajectory as well with how impactful he's been. The play speed, man, just unlock and go. He would blitz, QB spy, he'd drop. I mean, he definitely won SEC Defensive Player of the Week, and he definitely earned it. Kind of crazy. He's just a freshman out there, but he played his tail off.
Yeah, and I thought about going in that direction as well in that game with Mason Taylor, the true freshman tight end for LSU, who had a huge day. But I thought, you know, we've already covered a little bit of this LSU-Alabama game. Let's go off the map a little bit. So I went back to a game from last Friday night, and Boston College took on Duke, two teams that haven't really, had too much success here this year. Boston College has had very up-and-down quarterback play over the last couple of years with senior Phil Djurkovic. He's been out, in and out with injuries and just overall inconsistent play. He missed Friday night with a knee injury. And so in steps the redshirt freshman Emmett Moorhead, and Moorhead goes off against the Blue Devils. He goes 27 completions, 330 yards, four touchdowns, no picks. And so just a name to file away. I'm sure we'll be hearing more from Emmett Moorhead next year as the starting quarterback for Boston College. So again, just a name to kind of file away. Big, big debut there for the redshirt freshman. Let's now talk about the guys that we've watched here on tape over the last week that we wanted to bring to the table. You can kick this one off again.
So I will talk about, and sorry, I'm going back to that LSU-Alabama game, but Byron Young, and, you know, more people know about the Tennessee Byron Young, but not enough know about the Byron Young, number 47 for Alabama on that defensive line. A really smart run defender, but he also flashes violence in his hands to defeat single blocks and be a pass rusher. He understands how to, you know, catch and dispose of a blocker's wrists. He tracks the ball really well, so he can retrace his steps, find the football, make stops. Watching him against on that LSU tape, and then the last 2 weeks as well, he can be really destructive when he gets those opportunities. He doesn't always get those opportunities because of the scheme that they run with the three-man front, but when he does get those opportunities, he takes advantage of it. Love the body control. I think he's got contact balance. So Byron Young is one of my think about day two interior defensive lineman in this draft. I think Byron Young is that type of player.
Yeah, and they get DJ Dale back this past week. So, yeah. You know, just that front, obviously, look, it didn't help them in this game against LSU per se, but I think that front getting a little bit stronger as the year goes on. I'm going to stay in the SEC for mine, Dane, and I'm going to admit, I was just throwing a dart, like, who's a player that I have not studied yet that, at priority position, and so I went with Ole Miss corner DeAndre Prince. Had not studied him at all before plugging in a couple games over the course of the weekend. 6 foot, 181 pounds. Started his career at Ole Miss back in 2019. Went the JUCO route in 2020. Then went back to Ole Miss last season, and now has started the last 2 years. And again, at 6 foot, 180, this is a loose-hipped athlete. Very, very fluid. Never really looks stressed when he's pushed vertically. Getting in and out of breaks. Everything looks really, really smooth there. And I really like his play personality. Very, very competitive. Has an edge to the way he plays. And that's something I really value at corner. He's a very willing tackler. That was an issue for him early in his career, but he's come a long way since that point. I did not have any issues with him playing downhill in the three games that I studied last week. And on the field, honestly, my really only lone question was just finding the ball late. I think he does a nice job of maintaining phase with the wide receiver downfield. He'll stay hip to hip and looking lean. Basically what we talked about with Kaylee Ringo earlier on that play. But it's just his like reading the ball and finishing at the catch point late that I think was a question. He misplayed a couple that didn't result in big plays where just I thought I'd like to see him kind of react a little bit better based on him seeing the ball from the quarterback's hand. And that's fine. There are a lot of corners that have gone in the top 50, top 75 with that being a question. So to me, watching DeAndre Prince, the corner from Ole Miss, and that defense, they have got so many prospects, guys to get through, especially that back seven. So I'll be digging into them more over the weeks to come, I know. But DeAndre Prince, pleasant surprise. To me, I looked at him and said, I don't see why this guy can't be an NFL starter based off what I saw on the field.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that doesn't have obvious flaws. You know, things that you say right away, okay, well, that's going to hurt him, or that's going to be something that holds him back. Yeah, he's a guy that I think it was maybe it was the Vanderbilt tape that really stands out when I think of his name, stands out in my mind.
I did that game, yeah.
Yeah, he had a really good performance in that one. So, yeah, he's just a, you know, when you think of Ole Miss's defense, or Ole Miss, I don't think you think of defense and their defenders being legit NFL guys necessarily. You think of more about their offense, but they've got some dudes on that side. There's no question.
Yeah, they do. I mean, they absolutely do. And they're a really feisty group when you look at just the way that they play and the issues that they've given teams over the course of this season. But, you know, AJ Finley at boundary safety, Ashim Young, a Philly kid actually at the other safety spot, Otis Reese playing in the nickel. You look at the linebacker level, Troy Brown has been making plays for them, and he's a transfer that came in here this offseason. So it's a fun group. I'm excited to dig more into that tape. I actually watched the wide receiver, the senior receiver, Jonathan Mingo as well. Mingo. And he brings plenty to the table. But I liked Prince overall as a better player.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Mingo he's got his fans around the league. I mean, some think he could be a top 100 guy. Others have him graded as more of a, you know, fifth, sixth type of prospect. So it'll be interesting to see how he tests. But with Ole Miss, they've got, I think they have Alabama coming up this week. So that'll be another opportunity to, you know, really look at these guys and, you know, see how they project.
Ironically enough, I think it was Vanderbilt where Mingo went off. He had like 200 yards receiving. Yeah. He's from a height, weight, speed standpoint, I think there's plenty to like there. But I don't think that a lot of like the analytics community will be too high on Mingo, just because he was been like a non-factor as a pass catcher, like his first 3 years on campus, even though he was a star. I mean, he's a 4-year starter, he's been a, in the back of the minds of whoever's been at quarterback for Ole Miss over the years. But he's a good player. I'm excited to dig more into his tape as well. But
the one thing that the analytics will like with Mingo is he might have the biggest hands among any receiver in this draft, and that'll certainly help.
10.5 inches or, you know, something in that realm. He's a big kid. There's no question about it. The tool's absolutely there. Well, Dane, we've got a couple more players to hit on. We're going to welcome in Gabriella DiGiovanni here. Let's go on the clock.
On the clock.
All right, well, it's time to go on the clock as we welcome in Gabriella DiGiovanni for our weekly segment, a weekly debate segment. Dane's got a 1-point lead as we sit here today, but we know the trend by now that whoever has the second pick in this game typically gets the dub. But Ella, tee up the topic for us, and we'll see who leads off.
Okay, this week I want you guys to debate Ole Mr. Reliable. So a player that you have seen play now through November, who, you know, if a team drafts him, he is just a reliable player. So it doesn't have to be your favorite pick, doesn't have to be your top pick, but a guy that a team knows who they're going to get when they draft him. So we're starting with Dane first.
So this is an interesting question because it's very broad. There's a lot of different ways you could go. I considered Northwestern left tackle Peter Skoronski here, very solid left tackle, just rock solid. You know, we've talked about Michael Mayer before, the tight end from Notre Dame, how reliable he is, especially in the red zone. But my answer to this question is Alabama running back Jahmyr Gibbs. And it's because he's so good running the football and he's so good catching the football. He is the only reliable skill player around Bryce Young. They rely so much on what Gibbs brings to the table. And it's no surprise, Gibbs leads the team not only in rushing, he leads the team in targets. He leads the team in catches. So you factor in zero fumbles, he catches everything. He doesn't have off days. You know, every single game, if you get the ball in his hands, fireworks are going to follow. And so, you know, I can cite all these stats that he has, but it's something about anybody that's watched an Alabama game this year, you know that, okay, if Bryce Young is able to get the ball into the hands of Jahmyr Gibbs, something big is going to happen. Something positive is going to happen. And so it's a feeling when you watch Alabama games, especially that offense, when Jahmyr Gibbs is out there, it just feels a little bit different than it did last year with Brian Robinson, or even the year before with Najee Harris. It just feels different this year, and that's because Jahmyr Gibbs is so reliable in being a playmaker. And I think that's going to carry over to the NFL. That's why Jahmyr Gibbs was number 21 on my top 50 last week. He's going to be a first-round pick, and he is going to blow everybody away at the combine. Not just what he does on the field, but the way he interviews, the way he carries himself. I mean, he's really going to help himself. He's just a rock solid player. You know, everything that he's going to bring to the table. And the fact that Alabama relies on him so much, I think that that's why he is my answer here.
All right, Fran, here we go.
Well, I do think Jahmyr Gibbs is a good selection, but I will say, I mean, if you look at the history of first-round running backs, just in the last few years, the Sony Michels, the Josh Jacobs, the CEHs, the Najee Harrises, Rashad Penny, a lot of round-one running backs haven't always hit, so that can be risky business, Ella. And if you want reliable, you got to go with a Big Ten defensive player, right? I mean, these guys have consistently won Defensive Rookie of the Year on a yearly basis now in the NFL. And I don't know that my guy is going to win Defensive Rookie of the Year when we get to next fall, but I will say we know what we're getting in Iowa linebacker Jack Campbell. And when you talk about the linebacker position, that is a position that typically translates well to the NFL. And what are the traits that especially translate? Well, size, and he's got that. It's 6'4", nearly 250 pounds. He's got outstanding size at the position. Instincts. We know that is grade A. You need instincts to be a great player in the NFL, at least to be a starting player. And he sees things so fast. He works with a high speed internet. He's got a fast processor for the football. Play strength is there. Really, really strong on contact. He's an outstanding tackler. These are all the things that translate well. Even when we're talking about like TJ Edwards, Ella, and that was one of the names I wrote down while watching Jack Campbell was TJ Edwards. It's these traits that say like, all right, yeah, like he's not going to run well, but we know what we're getting. And he's outstanding in coverage, just like TJ. Great, great zone coverage defender. He stuffs the box score. He impacts the game in a number of different ways. He's unlikely to go super high because of that 40 time, and there's going to be questions about whether or not he can break 4.8. But at the end of the day, we're not talking blue chip prospect. We're talking Mr. Reliable. And I think Jack Campbell, one of the best players on one of the best defenses in college football, he fits the bill.
Ooh. All right. I kind of liked this topic this week because it was a little more general and vague. So it allowed for you guys to really just go and pick a player from any position. So I kind of liked that. History says I go with the second person in the debate, but today I'm going with Dane.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at that.
It makes sense. Why go with a fourth round linebacker when you can go with an impact first round skill player? I mean, I think it makes sense. Total sense.
I wish we could sit here and make like a sandwich bet on like who makes more, like who wins more like offensive defensive player of the week awards over the course of their career, Jack Campbell or Jahmyr Gibbs. I might take Campbell. But that's a good one. And look, All cards on the table, Ella. Before Dane had gotten to me with who he was going to pick, I was going to take Jahmyr Gibbs. So you made a good choice.
That's a verification. You made the right choice. I will not tell you, because this is a family podcast, what Fran said when I told him I was taking Jahmyr Gibbs.
Well, he sent me the same text. The way he introed the segment was like, oh, I was thinking Peter Skoronski or Michael Mayer. I'm like, all right, he's thinking one of these guys. I'm going to take Jahmyr Gibbs. And so I wrote up my whole spiel for Jahmyr Gibbs. And then he texted me like a half hour ago and said, yeah, I'm taking Gibbs. So good pick, Ella. And so Dane extends his lead. We'll see if I can catch up next week. Ella, Dane, we'll talk to you both next week right here on the Journey of the Draft podcast presented by LifeBrand.
What makes those great players great? It's time to roll up our sleeves and go under the hood.
All right, well, joining us here this week for Under the Hood is my friend Eric Galco. He just joined us for Mr. Relevant last week and now back for some Under the Hood action. Eric, from the Shrine Bowl, you can follow him on Twitter at Eric Galco. Eric, thanks for joining us once again here for the Journey of the Draft podcast presented by LifeBrand.
Appreciate it, man.
All right, so I kind of teed it up earlier on that I wanted to ask you about wide receivers. And so I will start with this. What is your non-negotiable at wide receiver? It's hard to be a great receiver without this one trait.
Yeah, I think it's the ability to separate the top of your route, right? I think we talk a lot about route running and those definitions, but all the great receivers from the bigger receivers like DeAndre Hopkins or AJ Green back in the day and Calvin Johnson, Andre Johnson to the slot guys, right? Like Kyle Phillips in the NFL now, or Cooper Kupp, whatever else. It's whatever route you're going to run, how can you get separation at the top of your route? And guys do it differently, right? Speed, twitch. Some guys are able to kind of use their strength to get off that block as well too. But whether you're running a deep comeback as a bigger receiver, you're doing a double move down the field, or you're doing a short area, quick out, quick slant, the ability to get off and get separation at the top of your route is the most important thing. If you can't get separation in today's NFL with so much space, you're not going to play in the NFL anymore.
So taking that part of it aside, is there three traits that you kind of value and say, all right, we can bang through them real fast and I'll ask you a follow up off like one or two of them. Yeah. But are there three traits on field that you're like, okay, like these are the ones that I prioritize alongside that separation ability?
Yeah, I think it's ability to develop as a route runner, right? It's not always about being a great route runner right away, but ability to sync, to bend, to adjust, and be able to develop as a developed route runner. That's an important trait. Number two, finishing at the catch point, right? Again, whether you're a smaller guy or a bigger guy, whether you have great extension, whether you're not have great extension, can you finish in traffic? Can you finish when the guy's in front of you? Can you show late hands in the red zone? We can go into that more detail about what finishing at the catch point really means.
Yeah.
And I think it's a defining big play ability. In today's NFL, it wasn't the case maybe 10, 15 years ago, but you've got to be able to create big plays, whether that's catch and run through strength and run after the catch ability, whether it's speed, whether it's twitch. You've got to have some way to turn a 5-yard play into a 20-yard play or longer. I think a lot of guys do that differently. We can go into those different details at receiver, but those are the three things for me that I think are most important to identify in a receiver.
I love that because we've seen that, and it's been a big theme this week or this year here in Philadelphia, is that ability to create the big play, but also defensively, you're doing everything you can to stop the big play. So it stands to reason that you're looking for receivers that have that X play potential, and why that would be so high up on your list. Real quickly, kind of dive into that developmental route running standpoint, because it's like you said, not every guy coming out is going to have the full depth of route tree and be able to win at every single phase. But if you show some of those traits, that gives you that hope that he can reach that ceiling.
Absolutely. I mean, if I can use a player as an example, last year, Tyquan Thornton of Baylor played in the Shrine Bowl. I knew Tyquan well. And at Baylor, that offense, right, it's a lot of three routes, right? So it's a hitch, it's a bubble screen, it's a go route. But I think for Tyquan, what you saw on film and watching him play closer is that in the red zone, a lot of nuance, a lot of understanding of timing and balance and angles. And you're saying, okay, I can develop that player as a complete route runner. And you want to see guys who understand how to play with leverage, how to work corners, how to sit between zones and safeties. And a lot of that can come from watching film and watching good players and how they do that, right? It's not rocket science how a receiver on the outside can beat cover two sometimes, right? Get to that hole, sit there if you have to, get vertical, whatever else it may be. And I think you're looking for as a receiver, hey, who has those instincts, that natural ability to know, how do I separate with this route? How do I control my speed? How do I know what the defense is going to be? How do I make myself separate in this route, right? As a go route, there's a lot of different things you can do to get separation. I think receivers that have that instinct can develop as a route runner. Obviously, you want to see guys who can bend a little bit and sink at their hips and adjust. And that's great. But I think even guys that are stiff can develop as a route runner if they have those kind of instincts on what separation actually means. Hey, am I running a play or am I running a route to get open? And the guys that do the latter are the ones that make in the NFL as route runners.
You've been doing this a long time, a number of different roles around football. When you reflect back on your evaluations in the past at this position, obviously everyone's got hits and misses, and you learn from those experiences. How have your evaluations changed over time, and how have they evolved?
Yeah. I think a player that I liked a lot coming in the draft that I think I kind of look at that draft class as a fulcrum point, but Laquon Treadwell, right? I think that draft we saw like, hey, you know what? Physical jump ball receivers are not going to work in today's NFL. And since that draft class, I've kind of changed how I'm evaluating receivers, because then you have guys like Hollywood Brown who had said, hey, no way that guy's going to make it. He's too small. And then here he is 6 years later being productive too. So I think it's really important that what's changed for me is hey, can you get separation in what you do, right? It's not as easy as, hey, are you fast, right? Or are you twitchy, right? There's a lot of ways to get separation. A lot of different guys do it. But for me, it's that focus on separation, especially the top of the route, which I said is my number one most important trait. I don't care how you do it. I'm intrigued how you do it, but I don't really care how you get separation. But if you can get separation at the top of that route, you can play in today's NFL. There's so much space, a lot more zone, a lot more bubble cup, right? A lot more stuff going on in the defensive backfield that, hey, if you can win one-on-one matchups and sit in the zone, you can play in the NFL for a long time, whether you're 5'8 or 6'8. And that's why I think I've learned from past mistakes. Again, I'm not trying to put Laquon Treadwell on blast here, but he's one that like, oh no, I made a mistake on Laquon Treadwell. I'm never doing that again. I think the offense in the NFL has changed quite a bit since then too.
Well, when you talk about the modern NFL, obviously that was a big discussion point this past offseason, was the value of the wide receiver position. Those difference makers at that position netting huge, huge trade hauls. A.J. Brown, Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, you go down the list. And then even at this trade deadline, Chase Claypool getting a potential high second round pick from the Chicago Bears. So when you look at the landscape of the league right now, how do you kind of view the value of this position? Do you think that this is now should be considered like alongside like tackle, pass rusher, and obviously quarterback as one of the prime positions in terms of value?
No, it's odd too, man, because you look at the last three or four draft classes and we've been loaded at receiver, yeah. Right? This year may be a slight down year, but I'm not sure how much down it's going to be. It's going to be a lot of guys that go in round two, but we've seen so much talent come in, but also the impact of these guys. And I think as the discussion kind of shifts a little bit from, is it worth paying every quarterback, you know, $40, $50 million a year when I could pay maybe a receiver who could make up for a lot of those issues and make my offense simpler for $20 million a year. I think it's a real interesting question moving forward in terms of roster construction. I talked to people in the league who have had that same thought. Hey, would I rather pay two receivers $20 million a year and my rookie quarterback five, or my quarterback 45 and two rookie receivers, right? That's kind of a interesting dynamic when it comes to, you know, building an offense. But I think these receivers that got traded for first round picks are all really talented, and it makes sense. It's just also like, hey, should you have drafted someone in the first round anyways? And the Eagles, as an example, took Devonta Smith and traded for AJ Brown, right? So I think that the value of getting separation and creating big plays on offense is probably easiest by getting good receivers. Now, that sounds maybe counterintuitive or stupid or obvious, but it's like, hey, if you have guys who can separate and create big plays, we're going to have more big plays. And I think it's really important that offenses have that now. And I think whether the Cardinals have a guy who can create like Kyler Murray, you have a pocket passer who needs got to separate by himself. I think every team knows that, hey, it's really good receiver group right now, but we still need two elite ones to be really good offense. So I think it's going to keep happening. I'm curious to see what happens in this receiver price going up, quarterback price going up, if they're on the same path or they start switching a little bit.
No, that'll be really interesting. And to your point too, like the Miami Dolphins, you trade for Tyreek Hill, but you still had selected Jalen Waddle in the top 10, trading up for Jalen Waddle in the top 10. So I think it's going to be really fascinating to see how that dynamic continues to evolve and change really across a number of positions there, but a wide receiver especially. Eric, once again, man, thanks so much for joining us here on the Journey of the Draft podcast. We'll be keeping an eye out for those Shrine Bowl acceptances. As you mentioned last week, those should be coming through here in the coming days. Thanks so much for joining us here, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man.
Dim those lights. We're headed to the film room for the scouting report.
All right, time to wrap the show up now with scouting report as we welcome in Ben Fennell to go through our notes on Miles Sanders coming out of Penn State. We're going to rewind it a couple of years here, Ben. Miles Sanders coming out in the 2019 draft out of Penn State, second round pick. What were your thoughts on Miles when he was coming out of the college ranks?
Well, he was an exciting running back with some serious juice, being a 4.4 running back, 36-inch vertical.
Yep.
Highly coveted player out of high school, being a 5-star, a bit of a track background as well at Woodland Hills out there. Number one running back by rivals, a good little strand of Penn State recruiting going from Saquon Barkley to Miles Sanders, then to Journey Brown and Noah Kane and Nicholas Singleton out there now. Whoever's recruiting and scouting running backs doing a great job.
They had another
job.
Freshman running back that ran for like 150 this past week, too.
Singleton, I think.
No,
Nicholas Singleton.
Another one. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Kevon Lee's still out there. I mean, yeah, just incredible rags of riches out there at Penn State. But he was exciting running back, but the main issue was he was really just a one-year player. Only 900 snaps played in his career in the three seasons at Penn State, but was behind Saquon in 2016-17. It was really just a one-year player in 2018 where he ran for 1,200 yards, 9 touchdowns, and where he really got a full taste of what he can bring to Sundays in an NFL team.
Yeah, I think that when you looked at him coming out, it was also it was like you said, it was the sample size was so small, and you were like, all right, well, what can this guy be moving forward? 3 years from now, could he be one of the better running backs in this class? The Eagles, I remember with the selection, everybody was so excited. Coaching staff wise, you know, you look at head coach, offensive coordinator, running back coach, everybody in the front office side, so excited about Miles, and he's been so productive, and this year playing his best football. But before we get into what we've seen from him in the NFL, could you dive into some of the notes and jargon, you know, in terms of some of the things you wrote down about Miles when he was entering the league?
Yeah, I felt he had good speed, not a particularly explosive runner, exceptional lateral cuts, good vision, knew how to set up blocks, always kind of had a good feel for those cutback lanes, primarily a zone runner in that Penn State offense. He also embodied the Saquon run to daylight style, where he didn't always invite contact, didn't always like to lower his pads into defenders very often, wanted to find the space, and was more of a wiggly finesse runner that was, you know, exceptional in the open field. So it was kind of interesting being 5'11", 210, and a guy that's a run-to-daylight style, surprisingly productive in short yardage. In fact, 26 out of 27 runs on 2 yards or less to go.
Okay.
He picked up the first down.
Wow.
It wasn't because he was a power back. It's because he was a slippery back with good vision. And actually only had one miss on one of those, and it was a play that was blown up on a run blitz against Rutgers down in the goal line. But anyways, 24 receptions in 2018, thought he caught the ball particularly well. Wasn't a diverse route tree, a lot of checkdowns and screens and things like that, but he caught the ball well, showed those soft hands. Now the issues as well, 2018 had five fumbles.
Yep.
Four off of contact, one was a bad mesh point with the quarterback, the lack of experience, didn't love his play strength and the way he finished runs, which is a huge point that I need to see on Sundays, considering the physicality of the game. But you saw the slashing ability. You saw the ability to kind of create his own running lanes with his visions and setting up blocks, and was a shifty, athletic running back that I thought was a day two player all day long.
And I'm glad you brought up the pass catching element, because I remember there were two elements of this that I think are important. Number one, James Franklin, he actually said it to me in an interview we did right after the draft, the day of the draft, after the Eagles selected him. We had Franklin on the phone, and he said, you know, our pitch to Miles for returning for his senior season was that he was going to be a much bigger part of our pass game, that we were going to use him much more, moving him around and trying to get him the ball more in space. From that standpoint, only 20 some catches that final year, they wanted to double that coming out, and that was, since that was a big question mark, was his pass catching and what can he be. He said that, and I know that team said this as well, that private workouts, not the pro day, not the combine, but the private workouts where teams really kind of put him through the ringer from a pass catching standpoint and asked him run all kinds of routes and do all different things. He like aced all of those workouts, and everybody walked away from them really, really impressed. And that was a big part of the evaluation and the projection as well.
You have your comp written down for him from that?
I don't. Class? I didn't have one written down.
I wrote down Jarius Norwood.
Okay.
Who was a slashing, yep, kind of a lightning combo back to Michael Turner down in Atlanta, a guy that was more of the satellite perimeter back, yep, and let Turner do the work between the tackles. And that's kind of how I envision him to be used in Philadelphia here since his time with the Eagles. And, aside from his excellence in 2022, that's kind of how I felt he should have been used, kind of keep him away from those between the tackle runs, use him more in the pass game, on the perimeter, down the field on occasion, on some wheels and, routes like that. So, and then this year he's really surprised us with his physicality and ability to kind of finish runs, yep, and to take on defenders. And
let's talk through that more. Yeah.
Yeah. And play with more, power in his running style.
Yeah. Cause I think we are seeing Miles play the best football of his career right now. And I think when you look at Miles, how decisive he's been and how willing he's been, even just looking back to last Thursday night against the Texans, he had that 25-yard run on the wham play. Those have been on his tape for years. We know that he's got that ability on those well-defined, quick-hitting downhill runs to just hit it and go. And he can hit that hole fast. He's got that ability. But now this year, you're seeing more, to me, and maybe it is anecdotal, maybe it's just a feel thing, but I feel like we're seeing more of him accepting, hey, this is blocked for 4 yards. I'm going to get those 4 yards, and hopefully I can get more, but I'm going to get those four, and I'm not going to try and create something else to create six. I'm going to stay on track here between the tackles and pick up some of those hard yards between the tackles.
And on Saturdays, you can set up blocks through decelerating.
Yep.
Almost coming to a stop in the hole and finding that daylight or finding that alley. You really can't do that in the NFL. You don't decelerate to set up blocks in the NFL. You have to set up blocks in almost a full speed downhill fashion, which is very, very hard to do. So I think he's kind of gotten away from the idea of let me set up blocks, let me slow in the hole, let me find the daylight, to just take what they give. And that may come up with more productive 4 or 5 yard runs. Maybe you don't break that 40 yarder that, we had seen the previous few years, yep, where it was a cluster of unproductive runs and then that one big one. And then at the end of the day, you look at his stat line and it's a nice day. But, there's a lot of people that are frustrated with his running style because of that. This year, I'm seeing less of the setups. And as you said, much more decisive in his downhill running approach of saying, you know what, there's daylight here. Let me just take what they're giving, put my head down, lower my pads, finish this run and keep it moving. And it's come at the expense of some of the huge runs, but a much more efficient player this year.
Real quick, this is just like an aside. There was a play the Eagles had against the Pittsburgh Steelers a couple games ago. It was the fake QB sneak where they just flipped it out to Miles on the perimeter run.
Yeah.
And that play got posted on social media a number of times. We posted the clip on my account. Jordan Mailata had a huge block, so it actually got posted from the main account as well. And so many of the replies were anti-Miles. Oh, if he had just cut it up. on that, that is not my takeaway from that play. It was like, first of all, the design was cool in terms of just the being a changeup off QB sneak, but it was third and one. He needs to follow the structure of that play, which is to get to the pylon, to get to the sideline. So yeah, like cutting up, there might've been yards there, but I'm perfectly fine with him staying on track and basically run the play as it's called.
Exactly. Take what they give you, finish the run, be productive and keep it moving. You know, it's those running backs that sometimes stop and look for the cutbacks and want to circle back and you lose momentum. And especially on a short yardage play, do not lose momentum.
Yeah.
Just go. And I think that's what he did. Did he miss an alley to maybe cut it back, you know, down the hashes there or up the numbers? Absolutely. But a 10-yard run on fourth and third and short or
if
whatever
he stopped
it was,
his feet there to try and cut up field and got tackled, fans would have booed him off the field.
Right.
But instead, they, you know, they obviously he stays on that outside track, gets the first down, and the drive keeps moving.
So. And it's much easier to see those running lanes when you're at home in sweatpants with the Coors Light, you know, watching film on a Monday.
Right.
You know, when it's full speed on third and one against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yep.
Yeah, you're trying to get 4 yards. Did he maybe leave a 15-yard run out there? Yes. It's hard to see those sometimes, you know, in real speed. It's tough out there. A little easier on your couch on Monday.
By the way, also, especially considering it's not like a – that's not like your everyday run. In terms of like blocking schemes and stuff, like that's like a space play. Let's just get him out into the flat anyway. But yeah, Ben, really good stuff there. On Miles Sanders, again, we try and do this every single week. Take a look at some players here on this Eagles roster.
Do you have anybody in this class to
oh, that's a good question. Yes. So like, yeah, that's right. I do always ask you that. So is there a player that that you've studied? Because I kind of struggled with this. A player that is playing
that
in this
easy
college class, that because all the other players that I've looked, I've studied 14 backs so far in this class. Some of them are seniors, some of them are underclassmen. And
let's
none of them really hit. Yeah,
let's go through. Let's just go through 10 real fast. Bijan Robinson, much more physical, 220. Jahmyr Gibbs, 200 pounds, more of an explosive trait, in my opinion, than Kamara, Gio Bernard. Tank Bigsby, physical power runner. Yep. Sean Tucker, track background, 200 pounds. Yeah, maybe
like
that style.
Charging,
much
like,
more explosive, though.
He runs more of like an Ajayi kind of like in terms
Sean
of like
Tucker
body
has an explosive gear. He runs 600-meter track for Syracuse. He's an explosive player. Zach Charbonnet, 220, power back. Zach Evans leads college football in yards after contact year after year.
Not that player,
or just behind Bijan Robinson. Devin Ashane, track star.
Not
Deuce Vaughn, unique body type. Chris Rodriguez, 225. Chase Brown, 5'9", 211.
That was where my mind initially went with
so
Chase
hard.
Brown.
He runs like, you know, Zach Moss, Mike Davis type of the guy. So the one I'm looking at here is actually Eric Gray out of Oklahoma.
I
think is a little bit of a forgotten soul in this running back group. Highly coveted player coming out of high school. Four-star, two-time Gatorade Player of the Year. Goes to Tennessee for two seasons. Transfers to Oklahoma. Didn't have the transfer juice last year as the Oklahoma Sooners pretty much fell apart last year as far as, you know, draft stocks and things like that. But is coming back this year with a really nice season. Has over 900 yards rushing, 8 touchdowns, has 92 career receptions between those two programs as well. Very similar height, weight, speed player as Miles Sanders. He was actually my comp I had written down from about a year and a half ago. So it's just more appropriate and a guy that I think can kind of embody the Miles Sanders type role for an NFL team.
I love that. Yeah, I really struggled with trying to come up with a player from college that reflected what Miles brought to the table coming out of Penn State. So, Ben, good stuff as always. You'll be back on the show later this week to help preview Week 11 in college football. We've got some big ones here this weekend. It'll be tough to rebound after what we saw this Saturday in college football, but we'll be back later this week here on the Journey of the Draft podcast presented by LifeBrand.